Welcome back, dear listeners, to the Dish with Dina podcast. I am so happy to have you join us again. Today's guest is Demetria Cox Thomas. Demetria and I dish about navigating the world of dietetics, the benefits of organically grown foods, and finding balance while juggling multiple responsibilities. Like many of my previous guests, Demetria is on her way to becoming a registered dietitian. She is based out of Charlotte, North Carolina, and has an extensive background in the culinary arts and agriculture. So sit back, enjoy the conversation, and let's dish. Welcome, Demetria Cox Thomas, to the Dish with Dina podcast. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to join me.
Thank you, Dina.
I always like starting with a little bit of a background as to how we came to know each other, and you and I, before we hit record, we started reflecting a little bit on that. And if I remember correctly, I found you on a post on LinkedIn, and I immediately messaged you because you were in an internship program that I was very unfamiliar with, having had been in internships myself, but also precepted dietetic interns. So I remember reaching out and asking you, would you like to speak to one of my classes? And you graciously agreed. And then we also ended up working out an Instagram Live. So is there anything else that I missed in that background story? Do you remember how it all came about?
Yes. So you had to refresh my memory, because one of the things that I did do while I was in school in my internship was just make sure I connected with just people online, just, you know, great spirits. And I remember coming across your page, and I was listening to your podcast too. So it was great to finally connect with you in that way. I loved it.
I loved it too. And my students were so appreciative of you bringing quite literally to their table, virtually at the time, your experience. So we'll talk a little bit more about that too in our discussion today. But let's go back a little further into your earliest memories. What are some of the things that you remember, that you recall doing, eating when you were growing up as a child? Tell us a little bit about where that took place, what the dynamic was. What are some of your earliest food memories?
So my earliest food memory, so I'm from Charlotte, North Carolina. I'm back there. I moved and came back. So Charlotte, North Carolina, for anybody who's familiar with the city, is more urban, but it's still a touch of rural, depending on where you live. So my dad's side of the family, they're all from this place called Anson County in North Carolina, where it's very country, very rural. And they all... I know I went back like Ancestry.com. I went back maybe 3 or 4 generations back, and all my family were farmers even back then. So they grew, they were farming, they moved here, and all of my family members, my aunts and my grandmother, they all came, moved to the city and still had their gardens. So they brought a piece of the country with them. So a lot of my earliest memories is watching my grandmother tend to her garden, and watching my daddy in our backyard tend to his garden. Like just garden work. That's probably one of my earliest memories. And another early memory that kind of stood out to me when I was young was my family dynamic. My mom didn't cook. So when I used to like hear people talk about how their moms cook these meals, I was like, my mom didn't cook. My dad was the cook of the house, and he was an amazing cook. Like everybody knew my dad for his cooking. So I always had good food memories with my family because a lot of my family were cooks. My dad, my granddad, you know, like I said, the aunts and uncles that garden, they all were good cooks too. So I've always had happy memories with food.
That is so fascinating, because a lot of people don't tend to their own gardens, or they don't farm. And meanwhile, you had generation upon generation doing that and really influenced who you are now. I like sharing some of my background too. I used to call my dad kind of the OG gardener back in the day as well, because even in our small backyard, we didn't have a lot of land, but he grew tomatoes and cucumbers and basil plants, and he was always tending to things. And so we didn't have a lot of crops per se, but the things that we did have were so fresh. And that's something that I noticed too, as I aged, as I became more independent and more responsible for my own purchasing of foods, things just didn't taste like they did when they came from our own soil. What were some of the crops and the plants that you were planting together as a family, or at least how your dad and your grandma were planting back then?
So just like you, tomatoes were like the big thing. And it's crazy because I just recently began to really appreciate tomatoes when I started growing them. But what I love, one of the crops that I love that my dad always grew was squash. And I remember this because most people, I remember like watching TV and some of the kids in my class when I was younger talk about how, ugh, squash. And you know, squash got a bad rap. And I was like, man, my daddy's squash is good. He grew it and then he fried it. I love, like, fried squash was my favorite childhood snack. My daddy also grew okra. He grew collard greens in the wintertime, turnip greens. I'm trying to think other things, because he grew like he'll swap out cucumbers, but definitely tomatoes were a big thing.
And Dimitri, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think sometimes what I notice in children and then as they age into adults, if they did not have a good relationship with the way that their vegetables were prepared for them as children, they end up being very discouraged from even having vegetables as adults because, like you, it's possible that they turn their nose up at it because they weren't experiencing it in a way that was cooked, that was palatable, that was flavorful. And so no offense to whoever was cooking for them, that, you know, if you're dealing with mushy string beans or things that are maybe over fried or overcooked or over sauteed or undercooked in that sense, or if you prefer raw versus, you know, cooked vegetables, like that really changes up the texture and the flavor. Do you notice that now too, as you're working in this environment, in this profession, and also, I guess, you know, meeting people along the way too, that they have relationships with specifically vegetables that you feel like they have to repair or at least give a second chance to?
Yes. And I say that even from personal experience, like even though I love squash and I love vegetables, like when I was little, so now I'm vegetarian. I used to get talked about when I was little because in the adults in my life's eyes, I used to disrespect meat, like well done burgers. And I was really weird about chicken on the bone. So I've always been a vegetable lover. But even me getting older and becoming vegetarian, even me, vegetables I didn't care for when I was little, I'm starting to love, like okra. Okra is my favorite right now. I couldn't stand okra. Even when my dad and my grandmother cooked it, it still had that slime. And it was like, I just could not. But now that I'm older and learned other ways to cook it, my favorite way is roasted. I love roasted okra. A lot of people in the South fry it too. My dad used to fry it too. They love fried okra, but my favorite way is roasted. And I even see it talking to like other people when I do discuss, you know, me loving vegetables, being vegetarian. And a lot of times they'll tell me, I struggle with vegetables. I struggle with this, I struggle with that. And a lot of times it's just a matter of having a conversation. Well, how have you cooked it? How have you prepared it? Have you ever had it fresh? Have you had it canned? Have you had it this way? And I found that some of my friends actually gave it a try and was able to appreciate it just from having that conversation.
And I'm noticing too, even in some, while I appreciate natural flavors, especially things that are homegrown, I'm also starting to learn to play with flavors in seasonings and herbs and spices as well to really see what brings things out and how we can complement and contrast certain foods. So even if somebody is okay with a certain vegetable, I'll probably encourage them as well. Why don't you open up a couple of different spices in your cabinet and take a smell, taste them, sprinkle them on during cooking or after cooking, and see how it all of a sudden changes that profile? Because you could be really surprised as to how things get kicked up a notch when we add a little bit of seasoning to it. And I'm not just talking salt and pepper, I'm talking, you know, cumin or cardamom pods or fennel seeds, like all this stuff that seems a little bit scary sometimes to play around with, but that's the whole fun of it, is bringing things to the table that might have different flavors so that you do add a little bit of strength to that already really good natural flavor.
The way I got my daughter to enjoy kale was adding citrus. I
Yeah.
love, like, citrus is like my secret weapon with green veggies. Roasting kale, roasting Brussels sprouts. To me, the secret weapon, I either do lime or lemon, just whatever I have in the house, and just a little bit of salt, or like you said, some cumin, some smoked paprika, and just you know, I love playing with spices. That's like, oh my gosh, the secret weapon. That's the secret weapon for enjoying a vegetable.
It really is. You know, when we talk about culinary experiences and bringing in the salt and the, or I should say the acid and the flavors and the fat, like trying to figure out what might be missing from a dish. And fun fact for the listeners who are not aware that when you do have green vegetables, the best way to eat them to help extract especially the iron that is in plant foods is to add some vitamin C types of foods. And citrus is a great way to do that. So not only are you adding flavor, but you're also helping extract that iron that's kind of like embedded in there to be able to come out and work in your body. So fun fact for anybody who didn't know that. Let's go into how this now played a role with influencing you in the career that you've chosen. Can you tell us a little bit about, was this always on your mind to be involved in the food and nutrition profession?
Yes and no. So my journey has been one of some curves and some interesting turns, but one thing that has been consistent is food. So because I've had such positive like connections with food since I was little, I already knew, like, when I was a teenager, I got involved in, like, DECA. And I don't know if, you know, if anyone's not familiar with DECA, it was, like, the business club in high school, business marketing and the things. And so I got involved in DECA. And I remember doing my first business plan. It was for a restaurant. So for a long time, I wanted to be a chef. I wanted to own a restaurant. And this is when I was in high school. I knew this. I wanted to go to culinary school. Fun fact, my dad actually went to the high school here that had a culinary program. So I knew I wanted to do that. I wanted to go to culinary school, become a chef, own a restaurant. And then it kind of evolved when I actually attended my first, my undergrad at North Carolina Central University in Durham. I majored in hospitality and tourism. So I had an interest in business and food. So I definitely wanted to learn more of the business side. So that's why I chose that major. And so I did hospitality. I did a lot of food service work. And I got in right before I graduated, like nutrition was tugging at me. Like I came across what a registered dietitian was. I don't exactly remember how I came across it, but we had a program at Central Nutrition Program. And I was looking at it. And I'm like, yeah, maybe. But I was ready to graduate. So I finished with my hospitality degree. The year of the financial recession of 2008. I graduated that December, couldn't really find a job, became a stay-at-home mom for a little bit, had time to kind of think about my next steps. So I dabbled. I went back to school, I think when my daughter was two, and decided to do nutrition. Just said, let me get my feet in. So I took some intro to nutrition classes. I was like, okay, this might be something I want to do. Now, no, this was back in like 2012. So I did the one semester. Then we decided to move because we were still in Durham. So I came back to Charlotte and did culinary school, changed routes, did a year of culinary, did no, it's not quite a year, did a few months of culinary school and realized, you know what? I don't think I want to own a restaurant anymore. And I don't want to be a chef. So when I had that realization, I just took some time away from the industry to kind of figure out, okay, what really do I want to do? And I actually stepped away from the food industry for a little bit. And somewhere in that, I got reconnected with the garden. So we bought our first house. My dad built my first garden bed. And I'm like, you know, I'm gonna start growing food. And in that experience, I got reconnected with nutrition. And I'm like, man, I talk to people about growing food and people like naturally come to me and ask me questions about nutrition. They just assume I'm healthy because I talk about food and all the things about food. So I'm like, why can't I? If y'all are going to listen to me talk, why not do that? Why? Because I enjoy doing it. So started back, I think this was 2016, 17, started back my classes, my prereqs to go into the master's program in nutrition. I'm growing food. I'm working in a nonprofit space with food, growing food and food gardens at school gardens. I'm sorry. So I'm starting school gardens, managing school gardens, becoming ready for my GRE in the master's program in nutrition. And then from there, I got accepted to a master's program near here at Winthrop University in Rock Hill. And I just completed that last year, started my dietetic internship with Garden to Table, and just finished my hours 2 weeks ago. So that's part of my journey. I think if I missed anything, I'll circle back around. That's the meat
of. That is quite a, no pun intended with the meat of it. That is quite the journey. as I always do, I'm scribbling notes here, and I want to first just commend the high school that you were in that set you up with understanding, especially business planning. Like that is something really that, because I am in the private practice space and a lot of the entrepreneurs that I meet hit the ground running with no clue as to what they're doing other than I just want to get clients and I'm just going to focus on social media to market without realizing you need to have some sort of plan, just like you would when you're taking a map on a road trip or something, you know, knowing what your end result is. So that is fascinating. And that you were able to do that with a restaurant in mind that kind of set that motion up for you to get involved in that. So I think that's fascinating. You and I have some things in common. I did not go to culinary school, but I went to every class I could possibly take with everything, knife skills, pastry, saucing, everything. I ended up running for a very short time, a catering and event planning business. And I'm not sure exactly what dissuaded me from wanting to open up my own kitchen full time or wanting to get involved in the restaurant business. But I know I got tired really quickly with having to cook and be on all the time and just the logistics of it all too, Demetria. Like, I don't know if I could have kept up with all of that in either running a restaurant or working in a restaurant or even like, you know, a cafe or something, because you really don't have time for yourself. It's, you know, if you're going to be successful, you got to be on. And you have to be working when people want to come eat, which is during the weekends and evenings and holidays. And it just felt really overwhelming to me very quickly. And so I backed out of that too. But unlike you, I ended up going into dietetics because I had some medical conditions that were concerning me. And I was looking about how to change my eating habits, how to nourish myself, how to modify some of the food choices I was making. And that ended up really striking a chord and getting my curiosity up, having like you not even knowing what a dietitian was. So I love that both of these paths kind of, you know, cross back and forth over here. We have some parallel similarities. And I also love the fact that you mentioned that your dad plays such a huge role, even in, you know, building the garden in the house that you bought. Like that's so sweet mm-hmm. that this is continuing to be that gift that he continues to give you. And can you share with me too, if you don't mind, how is your daughter with all of this too? Is she coming into terms with her own preferences and foods? And was it hard for you to bring her up in an environment where you were focusing on so much plant-based foods? Tell me a little bit about, if you don't mind, you know, what it was like rearing a child. Were there any picky eating jags or anything that you had to deal with in that sense?
No, I can't say she's a picky eater, but I can say that I don't force it on her. And that's big for me, because I do hear, when I do talk to some of my friends, a lot of their adverse feelings towards vegetables is because they were forced. So they not only didn't like them, but they were forced to eat them. So I don't force it on her. She naturally likes a lot of vegetables just because it's here. You know, we expose her, I involve her in cooking, you know, she smelled the spices with me. She helps me. Well, she used to, but she's a teenager now, so she don't help me as much, but she used to help me in the garden a lot. But just her being in the space, I still give her the space to, you know, tell me that she doesn't like something, or, you know, mommy tried this way, or can we do this, or can I make this? So that was helpful, just having it around just so she can see it. One of her favorite stories to tell people is that one of her first foods was avocado. So when she was 6 months, 7 months, and she was starting to eat baby food, one of the things I know I wanted to do was make sure I at least gave her, you know, things other than the jars. So one of her first foods was avocado. That's when I started eating avocado. I grabbed one, I was eating it. I'm like, hey, let me mash this up and give her some too. So to me, that's what, if I tell anybody who, you know, raising their kids and want them to enjoy vegetables, they have to see you enjoy the vegetables. That's first and foremost. You have to have them there. You have to figure out how you like them and let them try it. Let them figure out what they like and cook them the way they like it. Because like I said, she loves kale chips too. Her favorite way to eat kale chips is with lemon and a little salt. but that's from me exposing her and making sure it was available to her to try.
I absolutely love that. And that is a message that we've driven home in a lot of the past episodes about how our relationships with food, especially vegetables, and in our childhood really set the tone in a negative way sometimes. Like you said, you use the word, you know, forcing upon people. And that's something that really can create a bad dynamic with a child. So we often try to encourage people, just like you mentioned, having them available, having things available for your child to experiment with, expose them to different flavors, let them come with you shopping, let them be in the kitchen with you. And there is, as I've mentioned in some of the episodes before, I also teach life cycle nutrition. And Demetria, you probably know this as well, since you're in a lot of those classes and you've had those classes in the program too, that there's an innate ability for children to regulate their intake when they're very little. They know how many calories they need. They know things that they enjoy, different flavors. And so even though it can be quite frustrating for especially a new parent to have to attempt to expose their child over and over again, it can take anywhere between, like, I think 10, 12, 20 times for a child to get used to certain textures and flavors and try things over and over before they start really appreciating different things. And also allowing people to understand you don't have to buy jarred baby food. You don't have to get just the chicken nuggets. You don't have to eat just the smashed down cereals. You can really, obviously, when the child can chew and swallow appropriately, you don't want any choking hazards, but you can really just mush down or create smaller versions of foods that you are eating. And there's a great visual that I might link to in this episode that I really love when I teach that shows a variety of different foods, from tomatoes to crackers to especially nuts and things that are considered food allergens, with having early exposure to certain things in a childhood's life, in a child's life, that you can get them started on stuff. But it's just so, the visual representation is just a smaller version of what you're already eating. So it doesn't have to be as difficult. And I do think, you know, of course, I understand that there could be some challenges when you do have a child that's very picky and you feel frustrated, but I want people to stick it out. I don't want you to turn around and just say, forget it, I'll just give them a bowl of ice cream and just call it a day. Like, I want you to try to be patient and see what other things can come up that you can create for your child to be able to gain appreciation for it and learn to love. So let's talk a little bit about, since you do have so much going on and you're right now officially at the end of the hours for your internship, can you share with us a little bit about what the experience was for you? Because every internship program, so I do have a lot of students and dietitians to be that listen to this podcast, and every internship program has a specialty or an emphasis to their curriculum, whether it is clinical or community. How did you come to find and learn about Garden to Table? Because it is a new program if you look at the programs across the country. And what was it that drew you to it? And what was a little bit maybe different of the curriculum for what you experienced versus, say, a more quote unquote traditional either community or clinical program?
Ooh, yes. So this is the key. So for anybody listening that's early in their journey, you know, before they're doing their internship, I'm telling you, start early, because I actually went into this not really knowing about the internship. Like, that was something that kind of came in the midst of me doing my master's program, because, you know, it's just the way it was advertised and it didn't come up. It's like, okay, this is how it's set up. So I just so happened to be at a FNCSE, and the FNCSE was about basically dietetic internships out the box. And most of the things, that's a reoccurring thing in my life, most of the things I do is not traditional. It's never been. And so I was drawn to that particular session, sat in the session, and they were just talking about different internships that just weren't of the norm, that people didn't really know about. So just so happened to be sitting in this particular session, this FNCSE, I think it's the one in Philly, the one that was in Philly a few years ago. And they mentioned Garden to Table. They mentioned a couple other ones. They mentioned ones that had part-time options. They mentioned ones that had different concentrations. And that was very important to me, because going into this, I already knew I wasn't doing clinical. I've worked in the hospital before, many, many years ago, in the dietary department. And that was kind of, like I said, before I had graduated from my first degree, and kind of, I think that's where I actually learned about RD now that I'm talking. And I enjoyed it then. It's not really something I would enjoy now. And I knew that coming into my master's program. And I also knew, because I was a non-traditional student, because I am older than, you know, your 22, 23 year olds. I'm 36. So being that I'm an older, more non-traditional student, I had special needs as far as what I needed for an internship. So a 40-hour internship a week was not feasible, because I still got to work. And a 40-hour unpaid internship wasn't an option. So I'm telling you, Dina, when I first got into this, I'm like, you know what, I'm going to just give it up to the higher power and we're going to figure this out, because I didn't really know how this was going to look like. So thankfully, what drew me to Garden to Table was when I was at the session, they mentioned it. I did the research. Garden to Table not only offered the concentration of the work that I was doing, which is local food production, gardening, fermenting. We learned about foraging. We learned about a lot of cool, just local food things in addition to nutrition. So that drew me in. But this program was also affordable. It was also allowed me to do part-time work so I could still work. It was flexible, so I didn't have to be like, I was really flexible. Like, if I was able to find all my preceptors, which for some people is not what they want to do, but I know me, I've always searched out my opportunities, so it wasn't too difficult for me to lean on my connections to figure out if I can do intern, you know, rotations. So I found my own rotations, I set my own schedule, I was able to still work and make money. So all the things, those things drew me to this internship. But it was important that I started early, because if I would have came up to the DICA's deadline and I'm just choosing this one because it's affordable, but it doesn't allow me to spend time with our family, you know, that would have put me in a situation where I wouldn't enjoy what I did. And I would have rethought, you know, my future path in this industry. So I'm glad I found Garden to Table. It was very helpful in my journey.
Yeah, I'm glad you did too. And I will say, so I'm going to clarify a couple of things. So FENCI is the Food and Nutrition Conference and Expo, which happens every year. And it is quite literally a giant conference, and it takes place in a major city. And most students, you know, it's kind of pricey. So most students might not be able to afford it, but people can go online, and I'll link to a couple of things there too, where we have like open houses, and there's also a directory that you can look up programs in the country that are either within your state or even outside of your state. So what Demetria is talking about for Garden to Table is what's known as a distance internship program, where it is housed in a particular area in the country, but you don't necessarily have to be in that same city or state, because you are pulling from your own region. And as you mentioned too just now, with your own network, like, thank goodness you are open to connect with people. So that's something, you know, a lot of really great takeaways of things that you were talking about just now, Demetria, of growing a network, starting early and researching programs. Don't worry about getting pigeonholed into something that's going to scare you and you have to accommodate it, versus finding something that is going to accommodate you. And there's so many great programs out there that can offer that, because doing the dietetic internship is a pay out of pocket. And we are now going into the years where we have a mandate to get a master's degree as well. So there's a lot of payments that you're going to have to also finance for your, you know, career development in taking on this program. So having the ability to secure a program that allows for part-time hours in the internship, and then you can also work and make sure that you're getting money, or being able to just, you know, see your family, because these things can be quite grueling, especially if you're choosing a program like what I did, where I had a combo program where the master's degree was combined with the internship. So quite literally, you know, 9 to 5 Monday through Friday was my internship rotations, and then 6 o'clock to 9 o'clock at night, X amount of days a week for whatever, 3 or 4 semesters, were the master's degree classes. And that was really grueling. So making sure you know up front. And I will say that it's kind of our fault. For those of us in the academic world, it's our fault. We are maybe not properly explaining certain things. We are not educating the students who get into the major to understand exactly how to navigate all of this, or the students don't have a frame of reference at that point where they're just like, oh, I'm interested in nutrition, let me go for my degree, not realizing that there's a whole other section of things that you have to do. So I love all the things that you provided for us just to make sure people are as prepared as possible to be able to follow this dream, because it can be quite grueling and it can be expensive and it can wear on you and it takes a long time from point A to point B. So thank you for sharing all that.
Yes, and I definitely, that's why even with your students, I stress not only starting early, but just like having to virtually connect with people to just learn things. That was very important because, like I said, a lot of my connections, even with you, like LinkedIn, I follow a lot of people on IG, but these people I actively went out to connect with to just say, you know, there's something here for me. I just got to figure out how to piece it together and how it's going to come together to work for me. That's just very important to me. You know, I am a little outgoing, so that's easy for me to say, but I do encourage, you know, in your own way, just make sure that, you know, you're making really good connections, because they really came in handy when it was time for me to do my internship. And it was just a matter of picking up the phone. Hey, this is what's going on. And everybody was just willing. They were just so excited to help me. So I'm just so grateful. Mm-hmm.
I absolutely agree with you. Even for people who might be kind of quiet, reserved, shy, understand that this is your career and you're trying to build connections in that. So even if it's something just as simple as joining a Facebook group where other dietitians to be, nutrition students, dietitians, preceptors, et cetera, are housed, that's at least a foot in the door there. Because if you need to post a question, there are thousands of people potentially who could put you in touch with somebody. And I know I've done that myself. I've seen people post desperate questions and requests on these groups because something fell through or they weren't sure about something. And I was able to share with them the knowledge that I had. And, you know, it was for that moment in time. It's not like we remained friends forever after that point, but it was just enough to give them what they needed to move to that next step. And so even every little bit counts. Try to keep that in mind for anyone who's listening. Even if dietetics is not your profession, I think it really speaks to embracing a career over a job, right? A job you're just going to maybe be somewhat complacent, go through the motions and be done with it. A career you're really developing a network, you're trying to, and in our case, we have to professionally develop ourselves as well. We have to maintain certain credentials and certain credits towards our title. So that's something that is, helpful too. Attending webinars, attending seminars, going to mixers and networking events and whatever you can do and afford, I think, you know, working a little bit at a time, you'll get to where you need to go in that sense. So Demetria, tell us, what is a current week in the life of you as you're coming towards the end of this internship and moving in the direction of getting to be an official dietitian? What are some of the things that you have, like literally, you know, what are you doing to kind of wind down this, but also what are some things that you maintain in your own health and wellness journey?
Ooh, that is a great question. You know what? I am in a season of reflection and transition right now. So my week definitely is different in that I am resting more right now. A great analogy I like to use is basically even with the land. You know, I work with the land. So right now the land's resting. It's cold. Not a lot of things are growing. It's getting ready to be charged for the spring. And that's where I'm at right now. I'm resting. I'm reflecting on everything with my journey, and I'm meditating on how I'm gonna move forward. That's what I'm doing right now, honestly. Cause the biggest thing with my, the school, the master's and the internship part, I was moving so much that I did not take a lot of time to breathe. And I wish I would have took more time to kind of rest and breathe, and I didn't. And so that's another thing I'm gonna learn from going forward, making sure I'm incorporating rest and incorporating recharging and, not burning myself out. because I did get a little burnt out. And that's something I'm, you know, not afraid to share, that I got burnt out in this process. And currently that's what I'm doing. I'm resting, I'm recharging, I'm planning, and I'm reflecting.
I am so glad that you're sharing that, because I didn't know better when I was going to apply for my internship. I didn't understand the process. I thought I was going to go into the master's degree first and then do the internship after. And a lot of things got thrown on my plate very quickly. And I had to make a decision in about 3 weeks to get all of my stuff into the application portal and to be, into the system before the deadline happened. However many years ago that was, I think at this point, 8 years ago or so. And I'm not joking when I say, even to this day, this many years later, I'm still recovering from how burnt out I was. And I still have not learned my lesson in a lot of ways, because I think I got so used to just running and chasing my tail and trying to get to the next thing. And especially in the entrepreneur world too, where I didn't necessarily plan out properly ahead of time, or I thought, just like I was saying before, about hitting the ground running, where I just needed to make up for lost time. I just needed to get back and get money again. So I was just taking whatever came my way. And there was a point where I think in a year I had about 7 part-time jobs. You know, I was like, this isn't being an entrepreneur. This is working like a maniac. This is insanity. And so I'm slowly starting to scale back. I'm slowly starting to set boundaries again. And so I think this is a fantastic lesson for anyone else who's listening to this. Again, whether or not you're in the dietetics profession, if you are the type of person who takes on a lot or forgets to maybe ask questions ahead of time of what things are going to entail, or is not really sure of who you are as a person, what you can take on. Because I was one of those people too, right? Love being busy, love being challenged, but then it gets to the point where you hit that wall and then like everything stops and I'm just crying in a quiet corner someplace and I just become completely unable to do anything. And we are no good like that. And we are also no good to be able to relay our ability to help other people modify and change their behaviors if we are not necessarily trying to at least implement something with supporting our own mental health and physical well-being as well.
Yes.
So lot said there. That was, I feel very honored for you to share your vulnerability in that, because I've done that time and time again in these episodes where I want to be able to have people recognize it's okay to reach out for support. It's okay to take time for yourself. It seems luxurious to sit down and not do anything for a day. I should be productive. I should be getting these things done. So many things are on my list. No, you can't pour from an empty vessel, as they say, right?
Right.
So Demetria, what are some of the things that you are doing right now as far as go-to resources? How do you keep up with certain things? Are there textbooks that you've gathered and will keep? Are there certain, especially in the farming world as well, are there certain things that you are going to need to know and keep abreast of, whether it's, you know, land management or different ways that the environment is responding right now to whatever we're planting? What are some of the things that you kind of go to?
So currently I'm, one of my go-tos, and it's right here, I'm looking at it on my bookshelf, is a book called, it's by Leah Pennyman. It's called Farming While Black. And
I love her.
Yes. Yes. And that's honestly, you know, one of my go-tos. I also have another book, I'm looking at, I forgot the author, I can't see, but Grow More Food. I just read that one, and that one was a really good comprehensive text on planning out your garden. And also it's another book that stresses on what I can grow here in the South East United States. So I have my library here that of things as far as like my farming. Some of my dietetics books. I'm excited. I got this book called Communicating Nutrition.
Yes. I love that one.
Okay. I'm great. I haven't gotten to it yet, but I'm excited. I bought it about 6 months ago and said, once I finished my hours, I was going to get into it. So I'm excited to get into that. I also have one more I wanted to mention. Motivational interviewing in nutrition. I got that I need to get into. And I have a bunch of like vegan cookbooks that I was excited to do some cooking out of. Because like I said, I am still interested in cooking, although I'm not interested in owning a restaurant. I still love cooking. So I like creating things in the kitchen. So So those are my book choices.
The go-to resources. I'm looking things up as you're speaking. So the one that's called Grow More Food, that's by Colin McRae and Brad Helm. And yes. I'll link to that also. And The Communicating Nutrition, that is a massive textbook by Barbara Mayfield, who's also a dietitian. And it actually is a textbook that can be integrated into curricula. So I have pulled some of the information out of that. They were kind enough to gift, because I'm a preceptor with so many different programs, they were kind enough to gift me that and then also the instructor's guide. So I nerd out. Well, I'm sure you do too, Demetra. I nerd out over some of these things and I'm so in love. And that was actually my first degree. I had a BA in communication. So being able to marry these two things, I'm so in love with that book. So I'll link to some of this stuff in the program, in the podcast episodes notes as well, in case anyone's interested in that. I love it. So let's, as we're getting towards the end of our discussion, let's talk a little bit about the future you. What are some of the things that you are excited to do, whether you have a plan or not, 2, 5, 10 years down the line, or, you know, what, next year, whatever you have to wrap your head around, where do you see yourself moving into next?
Wow. So that is shifting also. Like when I got into this, I thought I had a clear idea of how this is going to look like. And now that I'm at the end of it, I'm like, ooh, we're back at square one. So honestly, the one thing that's main consistent that I know I want to do going forward, I want to marry my nutrition career with my gardening career. I'm just not sure how that's going to look like yet, but I'm excited. Like I said, I have all these resources. The main reason I got the Communicate Nutrition book is just to kind of get better with sharing my platform, because that's my next year. I want to grow my platform on just talking about nutrition, but in the context of my connection with growing food and the land and how that looks like. Like I said, not sure how that's going to look yet, but that's what I'm spending this time to create and get feedback on what people want to know and how I can fill that niche and bring, you know, value to that for them.
Are we talking like a blog post or something, or even putting on some workshops or something like that in your own community, or more universal?
I now still figuring that out too. I do want workshops. I want to do workshops. I want to grow my social media platform. I think that's the more immediate thing that I can do tangibly now, but I want that to grow into, like I said, workshops, classes. I would love to, because one thing with my school, my alma mater at Winthrop, they just did a community garden. They just opened their community garden. And they're doing their programming around that. So I would like to get more involved in schools that are going that route, especially if the nutrition department is the one running the garden, kind of help them with that programming. That's something I would love to do in the next 5 years. You know, helping with courses with yes. nutrition and gardening. I think that's something that's, you know, a little further out, but I would love to do that. I'm going to be honest. That's something that's definitely on my long-term list of, because we're seeing that that's going to be needed curriculum. And because I've been already working it, I would love to contribute to that too.
Yeah, I think that's very necessary. In our program, we had a massive kitchen that we did a lot of the culinary stuff related to it, but I think we could have probably expanded a little bit more on that and really develop people's culinary skills. And I think we're going to be, I work at Lehman College up in the Bronx in New York City. And that is actually where I did my second degree undergrad and my master's degree and my dietetic internship. And I think they've now broken off and tried to revise the major so that if in case also people were not looking to go into the registered dietetics field, that they could still maintain the degree, obviously, of being in nutrition and have a culinary or community nutrition degree in that. And so a lot more hands-on things. And the farming thing, I mean, I just don't, especially in cities, like you mentioned too, like in your area and in parts of New York City, I think too, you know, people don't even know like what a head of broccoli looks like sometimes, or they don't have hands-on experience with growing food and understanding like this comes out of dirt or this comes out of water. And so I think it's really unique to be able to play a role in that way, whether it's through curriculum development or hands-on workshops or going to a community center and doing some kind of theme discussion where I love stuff like that. Back in the day, oh gosh, what was it, 2017 or so, right out of the time where I became a dietitian, my interns/volunteers and I would wheel a 6-foot table down the street, and we partnered up with the CSA, the Community Supported Agriculture, the farm shares. And as they were getting in their shipments, it was all completely raw food, and we would just on the fly make up recipes right there and then to show people what you can do with the food that was delivered, even if you didn't cook it. So it was so fascinating to watch people say things like, oh, you can eat that raw, or oh, that goes together. And so that was really fun. But I also think, as you mentioned too, Demetria, like getting it into the students' hands, the people who are going to be able to process this, not just in the way of coming out into community or clinical settings, but really understand like understanding where food comes from, how things grow, and being able to play a role in that too, to add that to another level. Just like how counseling is also, you mentioned motivational interviewing. That's not our, we're not behavioral therapists. That's not our major. It doesn't mean everybody has to be a farmer or a culinary dietitian, but it's always good to get those, you know, grassroots and some of the developmental skills underneath it all to be able to have a more well-rounded approach as a dietitian. So I can't wait to see how you do end up pairing those interests and those skills and that unique quality that you're bringing to the table, again, as a food pun, to the table.
Thank
you. Yeah. Speaking of table, I'm going to first, before I wrap up our conversation for today, I just want to ask you, is there anything that we did not cover? Anything that you want to share that we didn't necessarily discuss that you want to just let the listeners know?
Oh, I just want to let the listeners know, please support your local farmers. They're amazing people. They're working hard to produce food and bring food to our tables. I'm very involved in the farmer community here in Charlotte, and it's just beautiful to see that people are coming to the farmers markets and supporting local farmers. So I just encourage everybody to do that in the local area. Just learn about your local farmers, what they offer. Sign up for the CSAs. We have them in our area too, the community supported agriculture programs. They just help keep the farmers fed, because the farmers work so hard to keep us fed. You know, they're not always bringing in enough to keep them sustained. So I just encourage everybody to do that.
I absolutely love that. I think that's very honorable and, again, important to understand where your food is coming from and who the people are behind the scenes who might be kind of not acknowledged in that way. So I really appreciate that. Thank you. So I'm going to ask you my final two questions before we officially wrap up. And that is my two-part question, which is, what is on your plate today? So today we're in the beginning part of the week. We're currently recording in December. You just finished with your official hours of your internship. What is on your plate today as far as what are you doing next after we disconnect? And then what is the next meal that you'll be having, if you have an idea of what that might be?
Ooh, okay. I'm gonna answer the next meal, because that's what I've been plotting since this morning. So me and my daughter, we're gonna either go to, it's a raw vegan wrap place in Concord. It's called Joamoto Sunfire Cuisine in Concord, North Carolina. But they have raw kale. It has kale, sunfire tomatoes, it has like the I think walnuts, but it's like a meaty texture, and they put it in there, and it's very seasoned, it's very delicious. And I think we're either going to go there, or we're going to go to this local Mexican place that does vegan tortas. So the tortas is the Mexican sandwiches, and it has like, I think onions and peppers and I think it has like Beyond Meat or something, but we're going to eat one of those literally when we disconnect. Like, we're going to hop in the car and we're going to find some food.
I'm actually holding you up from your next meal. That's what's happening right now.
Oh, you're fine. No, I planned for this. Like, I ate my snack to hold me over, but once we disconnect, we're going to eat.
That sounds so good. And I'm glad you're spending time together, quality time together. That's good.
Yes. And what's on my plate just in general, like I said, resting for the rest of the year. I'm not doing nothing big, but in the new year, I'm just excited. Like I said, my more immediate thing is starting my social media, gearing towards my new work in combining nutrition and my gardening work. You know, of course, I'm getting ready for the growing season. So, planning out my mapping out my garden for next year. My current work is at a local retirement community. I'm their community gardener. So, mapping out that garden, my garden, and like I said, just planning for the pass the test, the RD exam. That's in the immediate future too. So that's on my plate, studying. That's on my plate right now too, studying.
I really, this keeps resonating with the planning for things and the allowing yourself to rest, and also that analogy that you had with the land as well, of letting ourselves just regenerate, rejuvenate, and just be in that moment. And so I wish you all the best with being able to replenish, because once you do get up and running, especially with social media, we know what a time suck that can be, and it can be very to be on top of things and be consistent, however you're going to define that, that's going to be kind of cool to watch you ramp up and be able to share with your target audience, and for us to be able to see you have a larger presence in the social media world. So I can't wait to see that come through. So good luck with that, and good luck with just allowing yourself to ease in to the next steps for yourself. It has been a true pleasure being able to chat with you today. I really appreciated this.
Of course, Dean, I love chatting with you. I love
Yay!
Thank you so much for joining me this week on the Dish with Dina podcast. I am Dina D'Alessandro, registered dietitian, nutritionist, founder, and chief executive life changer at Dish with Dina, and I'm also your host. If you like what you heard, I would be so grateful if you could subscribe to this podcast, leave a review, and share this with others who you think might benefit from what we have to offer on these episodes. You can also join my mailing list at dishwithdina.com or email me at info@dishwithdina.com with questions, comments, feedback, and if you'd like to be a guest on a future episode, because everybody eats and we all have a story to share. I hope you tune back in next week when we dish again.